Good morning, everybody. This is about 2:31. This is your last lecture. And it is December 7th, Monday. We're going to finish up reproductive system today. And what else? Today there are practicums for those of you that have lab on Monday. And for those of you that have lab on Wednesday, you're also welcome to take the practicum today. So, and some people did take that practicum this morning, which is really good, I think. Yeah, that's what we want. Okay, so we went over male reproductive system last time. And does anybody have any questions over the male reproductive system? No questions for me. Okay. Well, I have a question for you. What's the purpose of the male reproductive system? Offspring? Well, I don't know. Remember that hydra? It can make offspring. There's no such thing as a male or female hydra. Oh, yeah, that's right. New and unique offspring, right? Because we're all different. It produces diversity in a population so that if somebody gets sick, we all don't come down with the same illness, especially if it's a fatal illness, right? That will protect the species. So that's why sex is so complicated, right? That's why some people have one set of organs and another person has a different set of organs. And, okay, you guys that are talking, don't talk so much because I think you're interrupting people around you. Okay, or go outside in the hallway. All right, thank you. All right, so we're going to get started with female reproductive system. And probably the best place to start is the primary reproductive organ in the female. As soon as you tell me what the primary reproductive organ in the male is. What is it in the male? Testes. Yeah, what's the function of the testes? Two things. Produces and secrete hormones. Like what kind of hormone? Testosterone, yeah, male sex steroid, right? And then what's the second function of a testes? Produce gametes. And in particular, a male gamete is a sperm. All right, so for the female, right, it's going to be basically the same kind of deal. Primary reproductive organ in the female is an ovary that I see right here, located bilaterally on either side of the uterus. And its function is twofold, namely, it produces gametes, but we don't call them sperm, we call them eggs or oocytes, and the ovary also produces sex steroids, but not just one like the male, two. And what are the two from the female? Progesterone and estrogen, or estrogen progesterone, either way, that's fine. All right, so those are steroids. They are lipids. All right, so let's take a look at this sagittal section and go over some of the features here. All right, so here is the ovary, and it's in the pelvic cavity. And it's held in place by some ligaments, like the ovarian ligament, which I can't see on this slide, and the broad ligament as well. And then reaching up and kind of hovering over it is the fallopian tube. So the job of this ovary right here is to produce an egg. And when that egg is ovulated, basically it just gets pushed out of the ovary and floats around in the pelvic cavity. And then it makes its way through the fallopian tube down into the uterus. And is that egg cell flagellated? Does it have a flagellum? No, it's not motile. It can't swim around. So if it can't swim around by itself, the question would be, how does it make its way through the fallopian tube to the uterus? Okay. So what were the two structures that we are aware of that are important for motility? Flagellum was one. And cilia. All right, so cilia have to be involved someplace, not involved on the egg, but all of the lining of the fallopian tube and this fimbriated edge are ciliated. And they are sweeping, right? And so fluid gets trapped in the motion of the cilia. Fluid moves down into the uterus. So the egg gets trapped in that flow. And so that has to be a nice, healthy fallopian tube in order for that egg to make its way through the fallopian tube to the uterus. This fimbria kind of looks like fingers, and these fingers are sweeping over the ovary all the time. They're just kind of moving back and forth. And that motion, again, is there to trap an egg once it is ovulated. And then it makes its way through this, sometimes your book calls it uterine tube, right, fallopian tube, down to the uterus. So here we have the uterus, and we got a couple different layers of the uterus. The endometrium is the inner layer, myometrium is the muscle layer, and perimetrium is the connective tissue outside. Right, so here is perimetrium. And where implantation takes place is the endometrium. And indeed, it's that layer that proliferates when a woman is in her reproductive phase of life. It proliferates once a month, it grows, becomes highly vascular and glandular. And then at the end of that period, it is sloughed off, the blood vessels degenerate, and there's a period of mild hemorrhage, and that endometrium is then removed from the body, right, with that menstrual flow right through the vagina. Every once in a while, some of these endometrial cells, instead of moving out of the body, move up the fallopian tube and embed in various tissues in the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity, like mesentery. And there they can proliferate once a month in time with the menstrual cycle, and that's called endometriosis. So that's a very irritating kind of process. But so there are endometrial cells that start to grow in the pelvic or abdominal cavity, and those endometrial cells come from the endometrium. So that's not cancer because they can't escape the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity. They can't go into other organs like the brain or bone or liver, but they sure can proliferate and grow within the cavities, and that's very irritating. All right, so that's something about the layers. Then here has got to be the strongest muscle in the body. This is the cervix. All right, so this muscle contracts during pregnancy and has to remain contracted throughout the whole pregnancy. And toward the end of pregnancy, of course, we all know how much a baby weighs, 7, 8 pounds, something like that. And I don't know anybody that can hold up a 7 or 8 pound weight. Okay, not even Arnold Schwarzenegger can hold up that light of weight for 9 months. Right? So this is an extremely strong muscle. And you can just tell by the uterus, right, the thickness of the muscle, how strong it is. All right, the entrance, I tell you what, here is, right, the cervical canal. So this is the entrance between the vagina and the lumen of the uterus. And if we go from the lumen of the uterus into the cervical canal, that opening is what we call the internal os. The opening from the vagina is the external os. And that cervical canal becomes part of the birth canal during parturition, as does the vagina during parturition. Of course, the vagina has another function, and that is receives semen from the male, which helps fertilize an egg, and fertilization usually takes place in a fallopian tube. All right, so an egg, once it's ovulated, makes its way down the fallopian tube, and there it is fertilized in the fallopian tube. Usually sperm have to be in the fallopian tube. They're waiting for that egg to arrive. That's usually what we think, how that happens. Okay. The cervix is a dome-shaped structure, and these invaginations right here are called fornices, so it's a circle, and in the sagittal section, it just looks like a little indentation, but remember it's a circle. This is the anterior fornix, there's the posterior, and then you have a left and right fornix as well. All right, the cervix is kind of sensitive tissue, sensitive to infection in particular, and that leads me to a question for you guys, and that is cancer a sexually transmitted disease? Is cancer a sexually transmitted disease? Everybody's shaking their head. No. Anybody say yes? Anybody ever want to go out on the limb and say yes? I don't hear anybody saying yes. Well, maybe I should tell you about human papillomavirus. Human papillomavirus can infect the cervix, and there's over 100 different strains of human papillomavirus. Four of them are known right now. When they infect the cervix, will cause certain changes within the cells that will then change those cells into being cancerous cells. Right? So cervical cancer, in most cases, is due to an infection from the human papillomavirus. So I don't know, maybe I would say, yeah, cancer can be a sexually transmitted disease, right? Because what causes it is human papillomavirus. And another way to think about that is when you get an immunization, why do you get an immunization? Anybody ever get an immunization against chickenpox or measles or any of that kind of stuff? Yeah, because you get those vaccinations to prevent an infection. And there is a vaccination now to protect women from the human papillomavirus. And so again, that just kind of supports the idea that cancer can be a sexually transmitted disease. And cervical cancer is very deadly. And a lot of women, I think there's about 20,000 women in the United States die of cervical cancer every year. And that's really unfortunate because, thinking along the lines of colorectal cancer, because it's easily detectable, it's preventable, and if it's detected early, it's 100% curable. So it's really a shame that anybody dies of cervical cancer. All right, so it is preventable by using condoms and protection during sex, having one sex partner, and if it's detected early, how could it be detected early? Well, women should have a pap smear, right? Probably yearly. I don't know what the guideline is right now, but probably at least once a year. And cervical cancer, or these strange cells that develop on the cervix, grow very slowly. So you have years to detect it. And once it's detected at an early stage, those cells can be cured with a little cryosurgery. They're frozen, and then that person is cured of that particular kind of cancer. So that's really handy. So please take advantage of those pap smears. Okay. Cervix. All right, some other structures. Here we see the urinary bladder and the urethra. They both empty into the vestibule, which is really outside the body. And notice that the reproductive tract, starting here with the vaginal orifice, right? And if we look, here's the urethral orifice over here, right? These two tracts never join together. So the female reproductive tract is always separate from the urinary tract. Not so in most animals, and certainly not so in the human male as well. There are some glands on either side of the labia. Here's the labia minorum and majorum. So these are lips that protect the vestibule. And the vestibule includes the urinary orifice, vaginal orifice, the greater vestibular gland, and the clitoris. The clitoris is the analog of the male penis. It's erectile tissue, and it has a lot of sensory neurons and endings, right, that promote intercourse, as does, right, this vestibular gland. It secretes mucus, and remember, mucus has a number of different functions. One of the functions is lubrication, but another function is that it helps regulate pH of that area that it's in, prevents it from becoming too acidic, because that acidity will decrease sperm motility. Okay. All right, I think that's all I want to say about this particular slide. So let's go to, oh, that must have been a quiz or something for you guys. All right, so here is a nice coronal section, and now I can see the lateral fornices of the dome of the cervix. Here's the external os, internal os of the cervical canal, and I can see the layers of the uterus probably a little bit better, like the perimetrium, myometrium, endometrium. And the endometrium is that functional layer that changes during the menstrual cycle. The other parts of the uterus, this is the body, right? And this is where implantation normally takes place. And then up over here, the very top of it might remind you of the stomach, because this is what we call the fundus of the uterus, right? And that's exactly where the fundus of the stomach is going to be, right? And in the particular case of the stomach, then this fallopian tube would be replaced with a esophagus, right? So the fundic part of the stomach is superior to the esophagus. Okay, then here is that ovary once again. And here's that fimbriated edge. These fingers are sweeping over the ovary all the time. And then this area right here is called the infundibulum. And then there's a little bit of a swelling right here that we call the ampule, and then it gets narrow. A narrowing is what we call an infundibulum, right? I'm sorry, a isthmus. Right here is the isthmus. Where's the isthmus at? Oh yeah, here, all the way over here. Here's the isthmus. It's a little bit of a narrowing. All right, so if you look at this uterine tube or fallopian tube, it might remind you of a musical instrument. Does anybody see a musical instrument when they look at a fallopian tube? What kind of... Name that musical instrument that you see. Anybody see one? Anybody? Raise your hand if you see one. Okay. Nobody's raising their hand. Well, somebody saw a trumpet, right? Because trumpets in olden days were just straight tubes. They weren't all coiled up. So think of an old traditional kind of trumpet that is a straight tube, and this reminded somebody of a trumpet. Like the mouthpiece would be over here at the isthmus, right? And this fimbriated edge would be the flared opening of the trumpet, and another name for trumpet in Latin is salpinx. So sometimes a fallopian tube is called a salpinx, and if anybody ever wants an image of the fallopian tube to see if it is patent, what does patent mean? Open, yeah, if it is open so that an egg actually can make its way down to the uterus. Sometimes we have to take a picture of this to make sure there's no blockages or scars or things like that. That's called a hysterosalpingogram. Hysterosalpingogram is just a picture of the uterus and the fallopian tube. Right, there's some dye that shows up really nice and brightly, and you can investigate the structure of the fallopian tube as well as the uterus. So that's kind of a strange name, but it's still used clinically. All right, so why would you be interested in getting a hysterosalpingogram? And that is because when somebody has a pelvic inflammatory reaction or an infection, not necessarily even a sexually transmitted disease, right, an infection of the fallopian tube can cause scarring. Because remember, what kind of cells line the fallopian tube once again? Ciliated cells. So those cilia have to be functioning. If they're not functioning, and this ovary right here ovulates an egg, that egg is just going to float around anywhere in the pelvic cavity, and it can float around up into the abdominal cavity because there's nothing that's separating these two areas. Or maybe it can even be trapped in the fallopian tube, but as soon as sperm are placed in the vagina, they can swim through the cervical canal, the lumen of the uterus, out the fallopian tube if it isn't blocked completely, and swim around anywhere in the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity. And if there's an egg there, fertilization can take place in the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity. And if fertilization takes place, those areas are highly vascular. Implantation can also take place in those cavities, but those cavities don't have anything like a uterus with a strong muscular wall, so that implantation can never go to term, and as a matter of fact is extremely dangerous, and I would say almost in every case it's fatal for the mother. Because as the fetus starts to grow, it rips away from the blood supply and causes a massive hemorrhage in the pelvic or abdominal cavity. Does anybody know what kind of pregnancy that's called? That's called an ectopic pregnancy. Yeah, very, very dangerous. And used to be missed a lot in clinical practice, so much so that in emergency rooms they would hang a sign that would say, think ectopic. So it's something not to be taken very lightly, because it was misdiagnosed frequently. A woman would come in with discomfort in an abdominal region or pelvic region, and everybody thought, well, it could be appendicitis. Not ruled that out. Well, then maybe it's just some kind of gastritis. Can't tell what it is. Why don't you just go home, take an aspirin, and then come back in the morning if the pain is still there? And a lot of times the women would die overnight of that hemorrhage. So that's why that sign was placed in the emergency room. And so now, when a woman walks into ER describing those kind of symptoms, then the physician thinks of a couple things. Well, number one, woman, right, it's got to be female. Is she of childbearing years? And is she sexually active? And if all those questions are yes, then you have to rule out an ectopic pregnancy, which is extremely dangerous. And that can be done using some hormone levels and some ultrasound imaging. So if you know anybody or yourself that had any kind of pelvic inflammatory disease, you're at high risk of ectopic pregnancy. And just make sure you have really good prenatal care, and you don't really have to worry about that. It's easy to track, it's easy to diagnose, and it's pretty easy to treat, right, once it's diagnosed. And it's really unfortunate if that happens, because that's the end of that pregnancy, but at least you don't have to lose your life, right? So that's really important. Or if you know a family member or a friend, right, please give them a lot of support when they're pregnant and they experience that kind of discomfort or pain. Make sure that they get diagnosed properly for ectopic pregnancy. And sometimes people need a lot of support to go in to get that diagnosis. Because I think I know more women that would actually rather die themselves than give up a pregnancy, right? So they really just have their heart set on something, so just make sure that they get proper treatment. Okay, so here is the lumen of the uterus, fallopian tube. All right, some ligaments. Here we can see all the ligaments now. So here's that ovary. Here is the ovarian ligament. And then there is a round ligament that comes from the body wall over to the uterus, and the uterus and fallopian tube, ovary, and these round ligaments are embedded in another ligament. It's a very flat, broad ligament, and hence that's what its name is, the broad ligament. Okay, just holding all of these organs in the correct position. Okay, anybody got a question about this anatomy so far? So far, so good? Okay, well, let's look inside an ovary right here, and I think we're going to zoom in. I see some structures inside an ovary, and these things are what we call follicles. All right, so here we zoomed into an ovary. I see a nice ovarian artery and vein. These little structures over here are called primary follicles. These things are going to turn into gametes, and a gamete has half the number of chromosomes compared to a normal human cell. And these things develop prenatally, before a woman is born. And before a woman is born, they probably have about 1 million of these primary follicles. Right? And then by the time the person is born, most of them atrophy and disappear. So a woman is probably born with about 200,000 primary primordial follicles, which can turn into an egg. But by the time a woman reaches their reproductive years, they probably have about 20,000 left. Okay? And so there's a potential to produce 20,000 egg cells. That's a little bit different in the male, because the male will produce sperm, new sperm, through his entire life. Millions and millions and millions. Women, about 20,000. So even if you're a woman, I wouldn't feel too bad about that, because I don't know a single person that would like to have 20,000 children anyway. Right? So that's more than enough. So what happens? Well, this primary follicle undergoes meiosis, right? And it becomes a secondary follicle. It's not shown, but you can see these follicles growing, right? And it's surrounded by a number of cells, and these are just different kinds of stages of that follicle. Eventually, there's a cavity that develops inside the follicle, and this thing right here, this large thing in the very center, that is the oocyte. All of these other things are cells of the ovary, right? And then it matures into something we call a mature follicle, or a Graafian follicle, with a very extensive antrum, and this egg is ready to be released from the ovary. These follicles right here are responsible for secreting an important hormone, and you probably want to write this down. Developing follicle secretes primarily estrogen. Estrogen. Right? And as the follicle gets bigger and bigger and bigger, what would you guess would be the levels of estrogen in somebody's body? It's directly related. So as the follicle gets bigger and bigger and bigger, then it can secrete more and more estrogen into the body. Okay. So then this egg is ovulated from a mature follicle. All these cells that remain don't degenerate right away. They turn into another structure right here. And this is what we call the corpus luteum. So the corpus luteum is the leftover follicle, right? But we shouldn't really slight what its function is. It has a very important function. At this time, then the follicle stops secreting estrogen, or the amount of estrogen is reduced, and the corpus luteum then starts to secrete progesterone. And then here is a nice mature corpus luteum secreting a lot of progesterone. All right, so that's what I want you to know about a follicle. A follicle secretes estrogen, and the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. All right, so a follicle and a corpus luteum are two different kinds of structures, even though they're related to each other. Right, and progesterone is necessary to maintain pregnancy. And the name of that particular hormone actually is progestational hormone. So when progesterone levels are high, then the female body has a way of talking about it, thinks that it is pregnant, and it maintains the endometrium, that layer where implantation takes place. Okay. If implantation does not take place, right, at the end of the cycle, then the corpus luteum regresses and it becomes a little like scarring tissue that's called the corpus albicans. It just turns into a little white structure right over here that does not secrete any hormones whatsoever. Okay, So that is the ovary, sequence of events in an ovary. All right, let's look at some hormone profiles right here. All right, so this is what we were looking at in that one picture of the ovary. Right, so this is sort of a diagram. It's almost like a graph that shows the development on the development versus time of a follicle. All right, so here is the primary follicle turning into secondary vesicular with this antrum. Then we have ovulation. What happens to a follicle after ovulation? What does it become? It becomes the corpus luteum, which is inside the ovary. And what hormone does this follicle secrete? Estrogen. And what about the corpus luteum? Progesterone. That's good if you can remember that. Okay, so this is what we call the ovarian cycle, right? Because we're looking at events of the ovary, and it's broken down into three stages. This stage where a follicle starts to grow and mature, we call this the follicular phase of the ovary. Right at ovulation, that's the ovulatory phase. And then the last phase is the luteal phase, named after the corpus luteum, right? Because it's the follicle that's determining events, reproductive events in the female, and the corpus luteum is then directing the other parts of reproductive events in the female, right? So you got follicular, ovulation, and luteal phase. All right, and these hormones do have an effect on the ovary, but they have a much greater effect on a different reproductive organ, estrogen and progesterone, right? Certainly they affect development of the breast and things like that, secondary sex characteristics of women, but their primary target is, who could maybe take a guess what the primary target is, of these ovarian hormones from either the follicle or corpus luteum? Their primary target is the uterus. Okay. All right, let's go back to this slide. So here we see a follicle, and what hormone again is being secreted here? Estrogen, and then the corpus luteum, estrogen declines and it starts to secrete progesterone. That's what's shown on this next slide. All right, so here is a plasma hormone concentration versus time, and this is typically a 28-day cycle, and we see a graph of estrogen versus time and progesterone versus time. And here we see estrogen levels increasing in the blood, and what is that related to? What is growing in the ovary? The follicle is growing, and as the follicle is growing, it's secreting more and more estrogen. But follicle doesn't really secrete much progesterone, right? Right at ovulation, something happens, right? It becomes, that follicle becomes the corpus luteum, and then what happens? Estrogen starts to decrease, progesterone starts to increase, and it increases quite a bit. And this is what stimulates the growth of the endometrium and continues to maintain the endometrium for implantation. All right, so don't forget, a follicle secretes estrogens, corpus luteum, progesterone, and the phases of the ovarian cycle. What were they? From here to day 14 was the follicular phase, then ovulation, and then over here, the last 14 days, that is the luteal phase, named after the structures inside the ovary. All right, so we said estrogen and progesterone act on the uterus. And here is a picture of what's happening within the uterus. And not all the layers of the uterus, but just the functional layer of the endometrium. There's a basal layer in the endometrium and a functional layer. The basal layer really doesn't change very much, but the functional layer does. That's the most superficial part of the uterus as you come from the lumen of the uterus. And you can see a vascular supply in this particular layer. You can even see some glands in the endometrium. All right, so during menstrual phase, the endometrium is sloughed off of the body because these blood vessels degenerate. Right, then during the proliferative phase, this is when a follicle starts to mature once again. Right, follicle's maturing. Can you remember what's happening to estrogen? Estrogen is increasing, and that causes proliferation of the endometrium. What does proliferation mean? Means, how about growth? Growth of these cells. Mitosis is taking place. Right, so these cells start to grow and reproduce, so the lining gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And then, right at ovulation, then not only is there estrogen, but there's also progesterone. So estrogen and increasing levels of progesterone then force the endometrium to maturation, to where the blood supply becomes very extensive, where the glands become competent to secrete nutrients for implantation. Right? And so implantation usually takes place around this phase of the cycle. And what are we looking at right here? What organ are we looking at? We were looking at the ovary before, but what organ are we looking at now? The uterus. So what we're looking at here is the uterine cycle, not the ovarian cycle, but uterine cycle. And we notice when progesterone starts to decrease, then this functional layer of the uterus starts to degenerate, right? And then it's lost from the body. Okay. And so this part right here, after ovulation, because the glands are mature and secreting, then this is what we call the secretory phase. The growing phase is what we call the proliferative phase. And then the period of that hemorrhage is called menstruation or menstrual phase. Right? So, and menstrual phase begins on day one. So as soon as somebody starts bleeding, that's day number one. Usually lasts for about 5 days. Then starts the proliferative phase until ovulation, and then secretory after that. Okay. All right, so if implantation does take place, then it is important to have progesterone in the body, progestational hormone, to maintain the endometrium. Right, but here we see that the corpus luteum is starting to regress and progesterone is going down. So can you think of a way maybe to signal the corpus luteum not to regress so that it continues to secrete progesterone? Right, because you want to maintain that pregnancy, that progesterone is coming from the corpus luteum. Well, after implantation, there's a special organ that develops, and that's called the placenta. Right, and the placenta is made of both maternal tissue and fetal tissue. It comes together within the endometrium right here, and that placenta starts to secrete a hormone that goes back to the corpus luteum, and it tells the corpus luteum that implantation is viable and corpus luteum stay healthy and keep producing progesterone. So there's a signal that comes from the placenta to tell the corpus luteum not to regress. And I bet you all know what that hormone is called, but I'll tell you anyway. Does anybody know what that hormone is called? You can give me the abbreviation. It's called HCG. And that's the compound that that is tested when somebody does a pregnancy test, even at home. It's called human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG. And so HCG comes from the placenta, goes back to the corpus luteum, and it tells the corpus luteum to stay nice and healthy. So here's that corpus luteum. Without implantation, it regresses. But with human chorionic gonadotropin, it stays relatively large, maybe even grows a little bit, and continues to secrete progesterone, which maintains pregnancy. Okay. It doesn't have to stay around for the whole pregnancy because the placenta eventually gets big enough to where it secretes its own estrogen and progesterone to maintain the endometrial layer of the uterus. Right? But for the first trimester, this corpus luteum is necessary. Okay, so in your mind, break down the reproductive events into ovarian cycle and uterine cycle, right? And probably not menstrual cycle. I mean, that's okay, but I would rather have you understand them in terms of organs inside your body, right? But menstruation or menstrual phase is a part of the uterine cycle, okay? Okay. Let's see what else I want to say here. That's pretty much about it for today. Okay, so I don't know. Think about these endocrine events and ask me a question. I want to go over them. Anybody have a question? What are the two phases? What are the two? What are the two cycles? That's what I want to say. What are the two cycles that we've looked at? Yeah, uterine cycle and ovarian cycle, right? And the hormones that control the ovarian cycle are LH and FSH that I see right here. Can anybody tell me where LH and FSH come from? Luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. Sometimes both of these together are called gonadotropins. They come from the pituitary, and in particular the anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary releases these. What's the target tissue of luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone? What organ? The ovary, right? So LH and FSH have an effect on the ovary. In particular, FSH has a target within the ovary, and that is the follicle, especially a developing follicle. Hence, that's its name, follicle stimulating hormone. It causes a follicle to mature. Luteinizing hormone from the anterior pituitary, on the other hand, causes ovulation. Luteinizing, that helps form the corpus luteum, hence we call this luteinizing hormone. And this big spike right here is what produces ovulation. So its target tissue is the ovary as well. All right, so these are anterior pituitary hormones that produce these events, right? The maturation of a primary follicle into a mature follicle and then causing ovulation. So I see ovulation happening right here on day 14. What hormone is primarily responsible for producing ovulation or stimulating ovulation? It is LH, luteinizing hormone. Maybe that's what you guys said, luteinizing hormone. All right. And then the follicle doesn't degenerate. It becomes the corpus luteum, and that's an important endocrine organ because what does the corpus luteum secrete? Progesterone. What does a follicle secrete? Estrogen, pretty much. Good. Both secrete some quantities of both, but that's what I want you to think of the primary product of the follicle and corpus luteum. All right? So we have estrogen and progesterone. What is their target tissue? Estrogen and progesterone from the ovary, in particular a follicle and the corpus luteum. But what's the target tissue of estrogen and progesterone? The uterus, right? And what part of the uterus? The endometrium in particular, right, during this these cycles. And so we see that increasing levels of estrogen correspond to the development of a follicle. So these are hormones coming from the ovary. And then here is progesterone. We can see after ovulation, the corpus luteum starts to secrete those. And be sure you know these phases over here. Target tissue is the uterus. And as the follicle develops and starts to secrete more and more estrogen, then the endometrium of the uterus proliferates. It grows more and more and more. After ovulation, when there's progesterone, then the glands become active. Proliferation still takes place. Vascular development still takes place within the endometrium. And the endometrium stays really nice and healthy until what happens? Until the corpus luteum starts to regress because it never got a signal from a placenta saying implantation take place. Right? So if implantation never took place, there's no human chorionic gonadotropin, the corpus luteum starts to regress, and the endometrium, right, starts to regress as well. Mostly because these blood vessels degenerate. That's what happens. Okay, if implantation does take place, right, then progesterone levels remain high and the endometrium remains very viable and supportive of that pregnancy. All right, progesterone has another effect as well. All right, there's a very strong muscle in the uterus. What's that muscle in the uterus called? It's a layer. Think of a layer. What layer is it? The myometrium, right? Remember, you got perimetrium, myometrium, endometrium. The myometrium is the muscle. Progesterone, right, has a tendency to keep the muscles of the uterus contracted, right, but in a very nice, quiet way to where they're not very irritable, to where they're not contracting in any kind of rhythmic sense. Same thing for the cervix, right? And so if that cervical muscle and muscles of the uterus are nice and quiet, that also has a tendency to maintain pregnancy, right? And all that changes during parturition. Okay. What kind of questions does anybody have? Anybody have any questions? No? Oh, I have kind of an interesting question. All right, so we talked about human papillomavirus and how that can cause cellular changes of the cervix, which leads to cervical cancer. What does human papillomavirus do in the male? What are some symptoms a male has when they're infected with human papillomavirus? Anybody know? Ah, somebody raised their hand. No, you weren't raising your hand. No. Okay. Well, it doesn't produce any pathology, right? So males are really not affected one way or the other. And as a matter of fact, they have no idea that they have the human papillomavirus. So that's just the way that goes. Okay. So that's why everybody suggests one sex partner, use protection, pap smears every year to protect yourself, right? Okay. Well, I think that's it for class. Unless somebody's got a question. Anybody have a question? No? Okay. Well, you guys might want to study for a practicum if you're going to take it this afternoon. So sign-in sheet. Here it is right here. I didn't pass it around. Okay, probably not so important today, but if you want to sign the sign-in sheet, there it is. All right, so next time we need what? A picture ID. Don't forget that picture ID. Scantron. Pencil, eraser, and I'll try to get here pretty early next time so that you can start the lecture exam pretty early. Okay, question? Now would be okay. Yeah.